Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello to everyone tuning in. Most of you are familiar with Celtics life, but if not, here's a quick rundown. We're a Boston Celtics fan site that covers everything Celtics, from the latest trade rumor to that other trade rumor, the Nets pick, and how exactly Danny Ainge got his free Chipotle for life card, and honestly, no one actually knows. The pod covers all of the same topics our site does, but a little more freely and from a weekly point of view. The best part of it all is that we're talking about it from a fan's perspective. We'll cover last week's games and major stories, as well as a look into the week ahead. We'll change things up as the show evolves, so let us know if there's something you want to hear, if something comes to mind. I'm here with Mark Allison. Let's start off with kind of a look into last week's games. What do you think about the Charlotte game, Mark?
The Charlotte game, that was, Jesus, seems like that was a million years ago, but it was only Monday, right? It was, when we were actually winning games still. So Avery came back for one night only, and They look good. I mean, we were at full strength that night, weren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And it seemed like all the pieces were together. It seemed like finally, it was a convincing win. ITU, this typical fourth quarter. It seemed like everything was kind of set. And then, Charlotte put together a good game. Kemba came out, did his typical stuff, 24 points. Out of nowhere, Mo Williams put up 21, which is not something you expect from the old guy. Overall, I think it was a pretty good game for the Seas.
Yeah, maybe that's how he got his all-star vote from Tony Allen there, Mo Williams, with the 21-point game. But, it was definitely to see the full effort like that. And Charlotte's a pretty good team, it's solid. That was, I think, Olynyk's second straight good game, right? Didn't he have 21 or something the game before that? And then, he had like 15 and 8 in that game or something. 15 and how many rebounds did he have? But I mean, that's like ideally what you would like to get from him, some rebounding and 15 points. I mean, that's solid, from him.
What you look from your 7-footer who can stretch the floor, the fact that, he was 2 of 2 from outside. Now the fact that he's been stretching the floor, and he had been insane against the Hawks the week before.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's coming onto this momentum, and then you go up against New York and Bradley's sidelined again. And,
yeah, the late scratch.
Yep, and Kelly wasn't there. 4 points, missed his 1-3 that he attempted. Shot like 33% from the floor, and the rest of the team as a whole, for the first time in forever, I think Isaiah was mortal in the fourth quarter. It seemed like.
Yeah.
Thoughts on the next game.
Yeah, I mean, so he still, I mean, Isaiah still had a solid game. I think he had 35, right? Shot 56%, but. Like just completely it was like he totally got he took 9 shots in the fourth, right? He was 2 for 9 in the fourth. I mean, we've come to expect him to bail us out every single time, like to always. It's like natural that he's gonna drop, he'll have 10-15 in the fourth, whatever, no big deal. And when he can't deliver, I think it really hurts when Bradley's not around, because who somebody else has to step up and score some points,
Yeah, and that's something I definitely want to talk about, is how much Avery Bradley matters in the scheme of this. Because back when he first was out with his sore Achilles, Marcus Smart stepped up that one game. I don't remember even who it was against, but he came through with an insane first half. And seemingly against the Knicks, the only other player who was putting up points was Jay Crowder. Right. Jalen Brown had a good fourth quarter.
Yeah, he had a good just game in general.
He was working his way to the line. He was, he's finding ways to kind of exploit the defense in the fourth, especially. So that was good to see from Jalen. But there just wasn't enough offense generated by the team in the fourth quarter. And they were outscored in the fourth by 6 points. After coming into a decent third quarter, so it was just, how much does Bradley matter to winning games? We had that streak where he was out with his Achilles, and we were able to win most of the games we played. The only loss, I think, came against Toronto, but. You know, I mean, Saturday night against the Blazers, you know, Lillard and McCollum, they're a really good backcourt. How much does Avery Bradley's on-ball defense matter to this Celtics team winning games?
Right, and this goes back, too, to that Toronto game that he missed the week before, that huge game we went into. And, you know, when you're missing him and DeMar DeRozan goes off for 40-something, you know, 28 in the second half, I mean, that's a different, you know, not only is he's first-team all-defense, he's probably the best on-ball defender in the league, one of them at least. And, you know, so that he's always been that, you know, an impact on that side of the ball. And you miss his defense, but now that he's scoring like 17 a game too, and rebounding on a team that's atrocious at rebounding. I mean, he's the leading rebounder on the team, which is ridiculous, you know.
Yeah, and so it's, I mean, like looking at just the box scores, you got mostly in the Knicks and the Trailblazers games, it was guards who went off. Derrick Rose, who put up 30 points,
right.
Was it?
Yeah, he looked like it was 2011.
Yeah, exactly.
He jumped in the time machine.
Yeah, and then you got CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard who lit it up yesterday. They combined for 63 points on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, looking back at that Toronto game, DeRozan, most of the points that he scored were when he switched on to Isaiah.
Yep.
And it's just like that's the glaring hole in the Celtics defense that when Bradley's missing, you can't switch him on to, you know, the leading scorer, and when especially against a team like Portland, where there are two guards who can score from anywhere on the court, it just makes it impossible for Isaiah to keep up with that. I feel
right. Yeah. So then there's a lot of those teams with those two guards like that, and that's why it's so great that we have two guys that can defend them normally.
Mm-hmm. And Marcus Smart, I mean, he steps up for sure, and he's a great defender. So that, I mean, did you watch the game on Saturday against the Trailblazers?
Yes, I did.
That final play that Marcus Smart, like, almost, it looked like a steal to me. Where you know,
that would have been epic. That is a total Marcus Smart play too, and it was
under the basket. Lillard gets the rebound. They're down by one, right? The Celtics are down by one.
Yeah, yep.
Lillard gets the rebound, and then Marcus just goes, wraps him, and swings his hand, knocks the ball out, and then puts it up for the layup. Whistle's blown, like, after the shot.
Yeah.
I almost
jumped through the roof because I thought I thought it was an and-one off the steal. And, man, that was – what about Rozier yesterday? That huge, huge – first of all, for Brad to even call that play for Rozier, you know, you're thinking obviously they're trying to bottle up Isaiah. So he was going to be – you know, they were going to be all over him. And the way that they executed that, I mean, the way they Horford set that screen there at the top, and then he was wide open.
Yeah.
But the ball's on Brad to call that play for him, and I mean for him to hit it too. But it's really a shame that they lost that game after that. That place exploded.
Yeah, I mean that was an incredible shot. Not something you expect from Rozier. I mean, he's not a guy that you think to step up for big shots. But I mean,
right.
Especially from three. I mean, I don't think of Rozier as like a sharpshooter by any means.
No. I mean, he can hit them, but I think he shoots like 33% or something from three this year.
Yeah, and he's got like a small sample. Like he doesn't take a lot of shots. But so
right.
I mean, I flipped out when he hit that shot. It's like, I was so excited. I was worried because there was still like 8 seconds.
Right. Left. I was worried that's how they were they're gonna come back and score on the other end. And it's gonna be man, that's too bad. But they got into overtime and then just couldn't pull it out.
Yeah, and it's the second overtime game the Celtics have played. Now they're 1-1 in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
But these two games gives the Celtics their first two-game losing streak since December 14th.
Yeah, that's wild.
So, I mean, I think we've been taking for granted just how well this team has been playing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the fact that, you know, we are probably going to have something up on the site about this, of just the Celtics haven't really lost to a bad team since November.
Right.
And, now they fall
in a row.
Two teams who are below 500.
Although I would say that Portland is probably better than their record suggests.
Yes, absolutely.
But
I mean, I've said it four times now, but just CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard are probably one of the best backcourts in the league.
Yes, absolutely.
So I mean I agree. Their record definitely doesn't indicate how good of a team they are.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I mean, nonetheless, record wise, and that's something that always gets kind of, especially near the end of the season, when you're kind of looking at teams that are making the playoffs, and they look and say, like, well, this team, a lot of their losses came to teams that were below 500.
Right.
So, like, we don't have a lot of those. But, you know, now we add two to our resume. Yeah. I mean, what was Portland's record coming into this game?
I want to say 18 and 25 or something.
18 and 27, I think.
And now is that what it was? Yeah, something along those lines.
And Evan Turner's return to the Garden.
Yeah, right. Did they play a video of tribute for him? For his one magical season?
I miss Evan Turner so much.
He was awesome. I knew it was going to be a big loss, but I totally understand why they didn't want to pay him that money.
Yeah,
I mean, that was no – definitely good choice.
Well, so let's move on to kind of the big news of the week. Probably the biggest news, Thursday night, All-Star starters are announced. And, let's kind of walk through the All-Star start. We got on the East, you got DeMar DeRozan, Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Jimmy Butler.
Mm-hmm.
Any names missing from that list for you?
Yeah, there's one missing for sure. The little guy there.
Yeah, what were your thoughts on
this is exactly why they took away the fan voting from being the entire makeup of the starters, because if it was by fan voting, Dwayne Wade would have been starting shooting guard, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yep.
You know, and he's playing okay, but I mean, Charles Barkley said it right. I was watching the TNT show and he said, this is not a lifetime achievement award. You know, it's when they were giving him a hard time saying the fans can pick who they want, but the fans don't pick the right people, you know?
Yeah. It's like a popularity contest.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why Dwayne Wade is still like leading the league in popularity.
Right. Exactly.
But you know, so they changed the voting. So now it's fan vote, media, and player.
Right.
And so the media says that Isaiah, they voted him as the most, he's number one in media.
Mm-hmm.
Player votes, he was second. But it came down to a tiebreaker with DeRozan, because DeRozan had, like, he was third as opposed to Isaiah's fourth.
The fan vote was the tiebreaker, right?
Yes, exactly.
I wrote a piece on this week. And so basically the way they break it down is the fan vote counts for 50%. And then the other two each count for a quarter. So the way that they break it down is they add up the numbers. So Isaiah came in, was fourth in the fan vote. So you add four and four. You add four two times. And then he came in first in the media votes. So you add one and then second in the other one. So you add one, two, four, and four.
Mm-hmm.
And then you divide by four.
Yep.
So it comes out to 2.75, I think it was, or something like that. And DeRozan's numbers came out to the same thing, but he, you know, he came ahead of him because of the fan vote was the tiebreaker.
Yeah, did Kyrie get first in player votes?
He got first in the player votes. Yep, it was Kyrie, and then IT. But it's funny too, because we had talked about the people were pushing, vote for DeRozan because if he gets ahead of Wade, it's better for Isaiah, which was totally not the case. They wouldn't even have been tied if DeRozan had finished ahead of Wade.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what are you going to do? It's not certainly, I would think even worse than him getting snubbed was,
Westbrook.
Russ Westbrook. I mean, he's averaging a triple double. Jesus.
Yeah. And I mean, the league players, media, they were freaking out about that. I mean, like, absolutely. If that's not
right.
Warranted to be an all-star starter, I don't understand what
exactly.
I mean, he's playing probably the best. I think he's absolutely runaway MVP. James Harden right behind him.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
Harden
definitely a debate. But.
Right, but if he's actually averaging a triple double come the end of the year, if he's not the MVP, then there's something wrong. I mean, if he wasn't on that team, they would be nowhere at all. I mean,
my friend and I were talking. What would happen if James Harden was still with the Thunder? Could you imagine that? Because do you think KD would have left if James Harden was still there?
Yeah, now, would they have been able to manage that? I don't know. Like, there must have been a way they could have finagled that, right? Especially with those guys all being their guys. Like, don't they have bird rights or something? They could have gone over the cap with three massive contracts there.
They could have figured it out, I'm sure. I mean, I'm not a cap expert, but I'm
no,
sure.
No, me neither. But, I mean, how did they let that happen? Like, they got – what did they get? Jeremy Lamb for James Harden? Oh, my God.
Not that, I mean, I like Jeremy Lamb when he
no,
played.
No, he's a good player,
you know,
but that's –
he's a solid role player, but, you know, when you look at
– Oh, my God. They traded an MVP candidate for him, exactly. You know?
So, like, that's something I always forget. But, yeah, so that was, like, I mean, there is a trade. Also kind of in news this week was just all the stuff going on with Carmelo Anthony and trade rumors and stuff.
What a mess.
It's just, like, I don't even know. I saw a really interesting trade rumor on, like, Instagram, I think, where it was a three-way trade between the Clippers, or sorry, the Lakers, the Cavs, and the Knicks. And kind of bear with me. The Lakers would get Tristan Thompson, Iman Shumpert, and Derrick Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Cavs get Carmelo Anthony straight up. And then the Knicks get Jordan Clarkson, Luol Deng, Lewis Williams, and DeAndre Liggins.
Yeah, wow.
And that worked out, like, money-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, and that seems like the most realistic trade rumor that I've heard of all of them. And it meets what he says he wants to do in terms of, like, what he'll waive his no-trade clause for.
Mm-hmm.
What are kind of your thoughts on just, like, the rumors that you've heard, even that one?
Yeah, I mean those big deals like that just seems I just can't see why anyone would want to give up anything of substantial value for Carmelo Anthony at this point. I mean, I get like I just don't I mean, he's in New York, right? He's been there for how long? How many years has he been there now?
Seven. He's been there for a while.
Yeah,
maybe I'm wrong, but I don't remember what.
It's been definitely something like that. Anyways, it's close, but I just can't see, like, they were talking about him to Boston this week, and I can't see us departing with anything of substantial value to get him. I guess it works out. There's numbers wise, if we threw Amir and Jarebko, or we have enough expiring contracts to make it happen. But what would the Celtics give up for him? Maybe a first round pick is like not a Brooklyn pick, but a first round pick. And would that even would they just dump him for that?
Well, that's the thing is, what would Phil Jackson want to get in return for Carmelo Anthony? And so, like, would he be demanding the Nets pick? I don't think Danny Ainge would be willing to shell it out for Carmelo Anthony. But would that be what the price would be? And then would that take the Celtics out of the market? Are the Celtics even in the market, in the running for Carmelo Anthony right now?
Yeah, it's like, see, it's interesting. I guess if Danny doesn't see him taking a picking up anyone, like, are we going to be in the Gordon Hayward conversation in the summertime? You know, if he doesn't see that there's anybody to take next year, Carmelo's deal expires next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's he's gonna? And I think I saw that he was gonna be like a $28 million cap hit if he gets traded because he has a kicker in his contract. So he would go. I mean, he'd take a big chunk out of the cap, but we could definitely fit him. But I don't know. Some people say he'd be a good fit in Brad's system, but I don't know. I don't see it. Do you?
Well, I think. I mean, I. As a Celtics fan, obviously, I think Brad Stevens is the best coach of all time. You know,
of all time.
Well, that's exaggerated. I love Brad Stevens.
No,
I think he does. I think he does a phenomenal job of maximizing every player's talent.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, guys, I remember back before we landed Al Horford. You know, we had commenters on Celtics Life. We had, you know, people on Twitter saying that they don't know if Brad Stevens can coach a star. And they pointed to Rajon Rondo as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I think Al Horford is playing really well, and especially not statistically. I mean, it comes down to, like, PER, where he's actually doing exceptionally well, and he's having one of the best seasons of his career.
Right.
But it's not, you know, you don't see that in stats itself. It doesn't quantify itself in rebounds and points per game, whatever else. But, you know, I mean, is a guy like Carmelo Anthony someone that Brad Stevens can coach? Will he get him to play defense at a high level? Will he get him to score, or at least distribute at a high level? Is that something that we're looking for? Can Isaiah and Carmelo, you know, mesh on the court? Would we have to give up Isaiah to get Carmelo? Is that something worthwhile? There's just a lot of questions that it's really tough to say. And there was a really good piece on 538 about whether a team can win with Carmelo Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that, you know, it takes a really good fit. Because, you know, people point to, like, the Olympics and the fact that he's got 3 gold medals. But, you know, he's playing with, like, dream teams. He's playing with insane groups.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's not fair to compare. Like, that's just not anything you can point to and be like, well, he can win. It's like, well, he can win when he's got an entire team of all-stars.
Yeah, maybe if you put him on the Warriors. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe just trade Dre. I don't even know who you trade. Andre Iguodala for Anthony straight up. I could see that Warriors team. Wouldn't surprise me. But so, yeah, it's I don't like the idea of trading for Carmelo Anthony. And I'm a Syracuse guy, but I don't like the idea of trading for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be totally opposed to it if we weren't giving up anything of substantial value, like you know, a first-round pick and maybe a young player, but not, like, not Jaylen Brown or any of the, you know. I don't know. I don't know. I would say I probably, you know. The only reason I would be interested in it is because his contract's up next year anyways, and if it didn't work out, you know, as long as we didn't give up anything of substantial value, you know, whatever. But I don't think it would be worth anything of, you know, value.
I think that the Knicks would be looking for kind of a win now. So they'd want to get like a pick this year.
Right.
Assuming the 2017 draft. Or 2018. Yeah, 2017 draft. Celtics don't have their own first round.
Right.
They've got the swap with Brooklyn. So I feel like that would be tough. We have two first round picks this year though, because we have
we have the Grizzlies pick or the Clippers pick, right? This year and next. I forget the order, but
yeah, neither are particularly appealing
because they're because they're both going to be in the 20s, right?
Yeah, they're both out of the lottery.
Or out of the lottery anyways.
Yeah, so I would say even it, unless you make like a really good package, like maybe your Rebco and then, like, I don't know, Demetrius Jackson or something. And then something along those lines. Like, one of our young players, and then a first round, and then Drebko.
Probably. Yeah.
I feel like that would be...
And Amir would have to be in there for money reasons, too.
Yeah, so, like, I feel like at the very least, that would be, like, the best that the Celtics could do. That seems like the least damaging, you know?
Right.
And I wouldn't mind that deal. I mean, I really like
Something like that is fine, and you know, it's I like Jackson too, but I mean, the fact that he's probably not going to see the floor anyways, just based on all the other guys that we have coming.
Yeah, exactly. And so you know, where I mean, I don't think that Phil Jackson would buy that deal necessarily, but if he were really desperate to get something in return, or if the Brooklyn pick was involved in that, then I think he would buy into it. But I just don't see a realistic way that we can find a deal that would not just crush what we have going on right now.
Right.
So.
Yeah. No, I agree. No, I mean, I think we can hand it off to the other guys.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll ship it over to Luis and Justin.
Thanks, Mark and Topher. We're going to get right into this. We're going to get into a topic that may either make people really upset or make them super happy. The NBA is getting rid of sleeve jerseys. Now, when I think of these sleeve jerseys, the first thing that comes to mind is that time that LeBron James was seen ripping apart the sleeve during a game. And I think that there have been two camps in the NBA, players that really like them and players that absolutely hate them. They think that it interferes with their shooting motion, whatever, whatever. I like the sleeves. Obviously, I'm not an NBA player, so I'm speaking on purely aesthetic terms. But I don't know. What do you think? I think they're pretty cool.
Well, personally, I think they are hideous, and I'm quite happy to see them go. You know, I'm also obviously not an NBA player, but I mean, I don't like shooting a basketball wearing constricting clothing in general. So I either like baggy t-shirts or just like an A shirt. And I think they look like underoos. I really think they look like pajamas, man. I don't like them. No love lost.
I'm pretty sad to see them go. I will say I did like the Celtics gray sleeved uniforms or jerseys.
The worst. They're the worst.
No, I have to disagree. But I will say there's some, besides the Celtics, there are a few other really, really nice jerseys. Oklahoma City comes to mind.
Don't
kill me when I say this, but I think Cleveland's jerseys are pretty cool. The color scheme is really nice.
Just because it's the color, not the team, right?
It's the color, not the team. I'm not jumping
just
on the
to get that out there so we didn't piss anybody off.
No, yeah, I'm not jumping on the Cavs bandwagon just yet. You know, they're pretty awful, but the Nets jerseys don't look half bad.
I like the Nets. I mean, as far as they go, I think those and the Bulls are kind of ugly, but I mean, I can live with them. I think the Spurs are pretty ugly also, especially the camo version.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of camo anything. It reminds me totally different sport, but it reminds me of the San Diego Padres when they wear their camo baseball jerseys. I think they're pretty hideous. But anyway, I'm sad to see them go, but hey, if the players are going to be happier and maybe shoot better, I guess, then I guess it works for everybody.
I mean, like I said, it's no love lost for me. The only ones I actually say that I like those sleeve jerseys for is the New Orleans All-Star jerseys. I thought those were actually kind of cool looking.
Yeah.
It looked like somebody actually did some graphic design with the shape of the shirt in mind.
Yeah.
Rather than kind of just like a decal slapped on the front of a t-shirt, which is, you know, why I think they look like underoos. Especially the Knicks. I don't think any, I mean... Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I had a t-shirt that looked like that when I was maybe 4 that I wore to bed all the time.
I'm not a
big fan.
Yeah.
Of the Knicks or the shirts. Yeah. You remember the Chicago green sleeve jerseys for St. Patrick's Day?
Yes, I do remember. I'm upset that I do, but I do remember those. No.
That was pretty weird, man. It was kind of like a compliment, sort of, but also not.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. Hated them. I think they were hideous.
Well, they're gone.
Yeah.
We don't have to worry about them anymore.
Well, speaking of changes, since, you know, the NBA is changing up a little bit, no more sleeve jerseys, there have been rumors of this expansion likely to come to the NBA sometime soon. Reported candidates for expansion are Seattle, which is pretty ironic. It's pretty ironic. St. Louis, Vegas, and Mexico City.
Yep.
Personally, I would love for basketball to come back to Seattle. I think that the Supersonics got hosed. It was totally unfair what happened to that city. St. Louis, Vegas, I'm not a fan of the whole sports coming to Vegas thing. I mean, we see the NHL doing it. I think that there's a lot of conflict there. But
well, you know, Silver is officially on record for being supportive of cautiously incorporating sports betting into the NBA landscape. I think that the logic is that if we have a right way to do it, it'll kind of discourage it from ballooning out of control and becoming a serious problem or more of a problem than it already is. So, I mean, I could see the logic of you know, Vegas being an extension of that, but both St. Louis and Vegas, in my understanding, are kind of fringy candidates, and Seattle and Mexico City are the two main candidates. And the reasoning for that for Seattle is probably pretty obvious. But in terms of Mexico, I mean, just the city alone has 20 plus million people in the immediate city and over 30, 35 million in close proximity, as well as, I mean, all of Mexico, which has 90 million people in it. That's a really big untapped market where they're kind of following on, you know, the Spurs and the Suns and to a lesser extent, like the Clippers and the Mavs and teams like that are near the border. But I mean, in terms of both recruiting and developing new talent, possibly opening up, I've heard rumors of a Monterrey D-League team, which would make sense also to help stir up new markets. basically, I mean, there's a lot of good arguments around the talent that is already spread kind of thin with 30 teams, and I get where those people are coming from. But there also is the issue that the rest of the world is really getting into basketball, and part of the reason why the talent is spread thin is not just because there's 30 teams, but there's a lot more than 30 teams over in Europe and China and increasingly Australia and other places. So it's probably a wise idea to take a balanced approach and try to cautiously expand into new markets.
Yeah. Well, since you have to expand with two teams, I can't imagine a league with 31 teams. That would be pretty odd. If you had to pick two of these reported cities, which two would they be? I go with Seattle and Mexico City.
I actually have to agree with you there because I'm pretty biased. I like Seattle as a city. I've never spent too much time there. I've been there for some conferences in my academic life. But I have a lot of friends that live up there, and I really think they got a raw deal losing their team like that. For those of you who don't know, I am our Mexico City writer, I guess you could call me.
Correspondent.
Yeah, correspondent is kind of an improper term, considering that we have, if we're lucky, one game in Mexico City.
Yeah.
I came down here with grad school research, and I've been staying here ever since. So clearly, I like the place. It's a very cosmopolitan city. People are worried about violence, and I won't lie, there is probably some degree of danger for potential people coming here just because of the amount of money that they're coming and the fact that kidnappings are not unheard of. But that's also something that isn't necessarily out of the question anywhere in the world. And in terms of just like raw numbers of the danger of the city, which is the main argument I hear besides the smog, it's actually much less violent than New Orleans, which has its own NBA team. And the smog is another good argument. It is pretty gross here at times on some days, but most of the year it's pretty tolerable. It's definitely a livable city.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Seattle sentiment. I also would be curious to see if Ray Allen came out of retirement to go play for Seattle. That would be pretty cool.
I don't think they can. I think my understanding of the rules, and it could be changed because it's not like it's not written into the CBA specifically, at least it hasn't in the past been written into the CBA exactly how the rules are going to go. But for at least the last three drafts, and this is important because we have two Seattle area natives on our roster who will be coming off their current contracts in the year that would be the earliest possible year, 2018-19, that we could have an expansion situation, that being, you know, Avery Bradley and Isaiah Thomas, for those of you who aren't aware of where they're from. And my understanding is, at least in the last three, they have not taken any players in free agency. And what ends up happening is they do what's called an expansion draft, where you can protect up to 8 players.
That's a good point that you bring up, because if this expansion does happen, the Celtics need to protect 8 players from being a part of this expansion draft. Now, that's kind of tough because you want to keep everybody, but you can't. You have younger players that you want to see develop, but you may have to let them go in favor of a veteran, so on and so forth. Now, if I had to pick 8 players that were untouchable during an expansion, I would have to say, let's see, Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier, Jordan Mickey, that's 4 right there, Al Horford, Jay Crowder, 4, 5, 6, Jaylen Brown, 7. this is the tough one. Avery Bradley. It's tough. I would go with Avery Bradley. Yeah.
I don't disagree with most of those. But a lot, I think, depends on the assumptions of what it is you're trying to do and your window of contention.
Yeah.
As well as some other things that maybe you didn't consider, maybe you did. So the way that I'm looking at this is the expansion draft, I'm going to guess it's not going to happen in 2018-19, which is important. I think it's a little too soon. It's possible, but I'm going to assume it's going to take one more year after that. So I think it's going to be the 2019-2020 season that this would happen.
Yeah.
So I think that in this case, players, like, I'm going to go out on a limb and make some assumptions about who re-signs and why. My assumption is going to be that we don't get the very tippity top tier free agents, right?
Okay.
This summer, because there's some good ones out there, but I mean, unless you get, you know, either the two Clippers who are going to be free agents, Chris Paul or Blake Griffin, Durant or Curry, I'm not really sure that the rest of the guys are worth, you know, chaining yourself to, trying to win now. And I don't really see Durant and Curry going anywhere unless they lose, you know, unexpectedly, like before at least the finals. It could happen. I'm not saying it's not possible, but the way that I'm looking at it is that if that happens, then what we're going to end up doing almost certainly is either trades, which is impossible to predict, especially this far out for that far ahead.
Yeah.
So in this case, I'm just going to assume that we're going to try to develop from the draft. So in this case, Brooklyn 17 and Brooklyn 18 are going to be two key pieces. So those are going to be two of the key players, wherever they are, assuming they're not washouts, you know, busts, whatever you want to call them. So those two are my players. I'm going to assume that we convince Kelly Olynyk to stay around, kind of like Serge Ibaka, Amir Johnson, kind of money for around 12-ish million dollars, just because he loves to play with us and he's kind of sucking. No offense, Kelly, if you're listening to this, step it up and make me eat my words. So I'm going to pretend that we keep him as well as the two Brooklyn picks, Jaylen Brown, because, you know, he's the youth movement. I don't have a good feeling about Rozier. I think he's going to be, you know, kind of an expendable, if better than he is now, player. So I'm just going to leave him out. And then it's going to be all starters, all the same people that you mentioned, minus Al Horford, plus Marcus Smart. I leave out Al Horford because by that time he's on the back end of his contract, and if there is value to it, then he's just as likely to get poached. And that might be doing us a favor in terms of if we haven't moved him through a trade. That actually might not be bad. I am not one of the people who thinks he's going to have a huge fall off, but I do think that it's going to be valuable to be in a position where an expansion team would be perfectly happy to take on his contract, where we might not get the kind of value we would want in a trade. Now, I know we wouldn't be getting anything for him, but I mean, this would be a decision where we've already tried to move him and we're not in a situation where we can.
Yeah. You know, it hurts me what you said about Terry Rozier. I'm a big believer in him. I really am. I love the way he plays when he does play. You know, he's been kind of shorted minutes lately. But I love his aggressiveness. You know, he can work on his shooting.
He needs some running. He's not going to get it with this team.
No, yeah, that's the problem. But I love the way he plays. I really do. So, you know, just to let you know, you hurt my feelings there, but it's all right.
I'm so sorry.
It's all right. Terry Rozier still has some time. Hopefully, maybe he'll show up in the playoffs again.
Nothing I like better than being proven wrong.
Yeah, maybe he'll show up again. That would be pretty cool. But this is what makes this so difficult. You have to, I mean, for our purposes, you know, we're doing this sort of just for fun, but you have to look ahead. Like, for a minute there, you made a good point. Like, Al Horford is obviously going to be older. He's going to be towards creeping up towards the end of his career. So how useful is he really? Is he a player that you protect over a Jaylen Brown or a Kelly Olynyk or a Jordan Mickey?
I think so.
So no, but you make a good point about that. So I have to reconsider basically all of my choices. But so, well, speaking of, because I'm looking at our roster right now, what do you think is going to happen to Demetrius Jackson?
Demetrius Jackson is Terry Rozier insurance.
Yeah.
And he, if we draft any of the top guards, if we get a top three pick, we almost certainly will. And we book we draft either Ball or Markel Fultz, then I think one or both of them is gone in terms of consolidation for some developing teams, just to try to balance the roster a bit. I think they're also insurance, both of them, in case we end up moving somebody like Bradley or even Isaiah Thomas, depending on the deal. I think it's just to give us maximum positional flexibility.
Yeah. Well, speaking of expanding, what do we do about Yabusele and Zizic next year? It seems like both of them think they're going to be playing in the NBA next season, but obviously, as of right now, we don't have the space for them. So what do you do if you're Danny Ainge? Do you trade two players or one player to make room for them for their impending arrival, apparently? Or do you try to convince them to stay overseas for yet another year, despite the fact that they're both playing extremely well?
Well, I think Yabusele is really the only option. I think we'll end up losing Zizek if we try to get him to wait. So I think that is the rationale.
Yeah.
In terms of, I mean, if the rookie scale does go up 50% because of where he was drafted, Yabusele, he's just going to have to wait another year if that actually does end up happening. I don't think we have a clear information as to whether or not it's actually going up 50% or not. But my understanding, there's a good article out there by Ryan Bernardoni, aka Danger Car, on his Twitter handle, that talks about this and the fact that it's going to be a really big juggling act. On one hand, they're really valuable if we take a big hit to our front court depth, which we might if we have a good trade coming up. If we don't bring back any of the front court players that are on short term or at least non guaranteed deals in the case of Zeller, but also Johnson and Jarebko, we would be really, really thin in our rotation. And I don't know that they are. I think a lot of people overvalue what they're doing because the level of competition, it's better than D League, but it's not anywhere near the level of the NBA.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, the opportunity to bring them over, I think Zizek is going to be okay because he can just get boards. I think Yabusele's game is going to take a little bit more time to get some polish to it. And I mean, that fits. So, I mean, there is a legitimate argument apart from cap concerns for him spending more time rather than coming over here and being expected to do too much in a situation where there would be room for him and then burning him out. Because he needs the playing time. He really does. And he's doing great things, so I'm not knocking him to you guys who are supporting him, but you know, I want to see him succeed, and I really think that at least in Yabusele's case, because what's going to be expected of him to be more of a perimeter shooter, to be more mobile, and play away from the basket more, I definitely think it's not going to hurt him and will probably help him if he stays overseas. And it's going to have to be one or the other, not both.
All right, so what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to read you a stat line over the course of three games, all mm-hmm. right? And you're going to tell me who you think these stats belong to. All right, 33.3 points per game, 15.7 rebounds, and 4.7 assists. You just guess who that may be.
Now, I'm going to just use reverse psychology here. It's got to be Yabusele because that sounds like a Zizek line based on what I've been reading.
It's Yabusele. How do you say no to that? I mean, those are crazy numbers. Sure, it's over the course of three games, but I mean, the rebounds alone. I mean, I don't know how that's extremely impressive. Sure, it's not, you know, he's not playing in the NBA, and this isn't NBA level competition, but I mean, basically 16 boards and 33 points. That's pretty wild. And very efficient, obviously. So I think next season the Celtics are going to have a tough decision to make.
Lots of them.
Yeah, so we'll see about that. Well, another tough decision. is going to be whether or not we roll the dice on Rudy Gay. Rudy Gay is out for the season. He's having surgery on his Achilles, and this is the last year of his contract with Sacramento. He's out for the year. Obviously, he has to recover. But I think that you roll the dice on a player like him. This year he's averaging 18.7 points per game, 6.3 rebounds, and 2.7 assists. I think he would be an incredible asset to the Celtics.
Well, people do come back from Achilles, and I'm going to assume that you mean not this offseason, but potentially for a future. We wouldn't trade for him until he comes back.
Yeah.
Just because there would be no point in. I guess I could see a scenario where we could trade for him in the offseason after whiffing on just about everybody to do. At this point, I think we would have to be getting a pick for taking him.
Yeah.
But if we have dead salary for a season. Yeah, I could see that being a gamble, and then we'd have an expiring contract that could be increasingly valued as the effects of the new CBA and how it's designed to kind of break up these super teams comes into effect when people are starting to need to clear some salary off their books. We might be able to parlay that into something useful. I can see people rolling their eyes initially at the idea of trading for Rudy Gay, and I wouldn't do it for this year, but I could definitely see the value in the future of doing something like that. Particularly, before a snapped Achilles was basically a death sentence for a career, but people are coming back from them now and being solid contributors. It happened to Kobe, and he wasn't the same, but he was still, a starter level player, if not an all-star.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that people need to pay more attention to in terms of resting players. Which really hits home because Avery Bradley is out with a strained Achilles right now, for another week, and I know that people are really frustrated with the amount of injuries that we've had this season. It seems like somebody is almost always out. We can't go more than two or three games at a time without someone being out, and oftentimes for extensive rest. But particularly in this particular instance, I think it's the right move. Bradley's game is exceedingly dependent on his ability to defend very aggressively in cut. I don't think we wouldn't either get what's valuable enough from him if he's protecting himself as he should while he gets back to full strength, or he really would be in danger of doing something like this to himself. And either way, I don't think that's a good idea.
No, 100%. I'm a big fan of players taking as much time as they need off to fully recover from whatever it is that's ailing them. I hate when players come back too soon and then they end up just aggravating injuries that put them out for an even longer period of time. So, Avery Bradley, let's just take your time coming back. I know the Celtics do miss his presence, but I'd rather have him out for a week or two than for two or three months.
Brooklyn Nets management, if you're listening, sure, Jeremy Lin takes his time coming back. We do not want him to hurt his hamstring any further.
No. I think at this point of the season, I think the Nets should just rest most of their players because we don't want to see any of them get hurt.
No, honestly, from they're not going to do much better at this point, and they have now two injury-prone players. Why would you risk their long-term trade value? You've got both of them, and you're not going to get any better than probably maybe the third or fourth worst seed. You're not touching the playoffs. There's no chance.
No, there's no chance.
Give your young guys run. They've put together a surprisingly competent roster under the new coach, and some of them could actually get some value out of some increased playing time at the NBA level. I'm completely biased in all my information here, but
sorry about that, guys.
It happens.
Speaking of the Brooklyn Nets, total side note. I was at work today and. Brooklyn Nets rep sold me a fan appreciation package. So listen to
what
this.
Was 50, what was in it?
So I got, for $50, I got two tickets to a game, any game I want, wherever I want to sit. Then I got two buy two, get two free vouchers, and five buy one, get one free vouchers for $50.
Quite a lot.
Which makes me think that they're not, you know, selling too many tickets this year.
I would imagine it's a problem.
Yeah, it's a little problematic. But anyway, I think we've piled on the Nets a little too much. Whatever.
Impossible.
It's impossible. Anyway, looking ahead, we have a few games coming up this week for the Seas. We have matchups against Washington, Houston, Orlando, and Milwaukee. Now, I can see the Celtics going 3-1, with the lone loss coming to either Houston or Milwaukee. Milwaukee is a pretty dangerous team. But, you know, Washington won't be an easy win, but I can see them pulling out a win. John Wall he's a scary player, but even with Avery Bradley out, I think he may still go off. He may be the leading scorer in the game, but it doesn't matter as long as nobody else shows up. So I think that you can count that as a win. The Houston game, we lost to them not too long ago. But we'll see. There's been this narrative throughout the season, and the Celtics have always proven us right, that it seems like they can't beat a quality team. They beat up on lesser teams.
A quality team.
Huh?
You say that Houston's a quality team then?
Houston is a quality team, for sure.
I don't disagree. But we're calling them a fringe contender. I think that that's probably accurate. But, I mean, you know, they're 33 wins and 13 losses. And, you know, if they were in the West, if they weren't in the West, I think they would arguably be a favorite over Cleveland.
Oh, yeah, 100%. The East is arguably much weaker than the West. I hate to sound like that guy. It's something that a lot of people argue. But, you know, in the West, there are so many good teams. You have the Spurs, you have the Warriors, you have Houston. Whereas in the East, you have the Cavs, maybe the Seas, depending on who you're talking to, and Toronto. So the level of competition, it seems, is much higher. In the West, you have Russell Westbrook out there, who is playing out of his mind, but not enough to earn a starting spot in the All-Star game, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think that Houston is a pretty good team. I feel comfortable saying that. So we'll see. It'll be a very tough matchup against them. If the Seas can pull that win off, I think maybe they can start to put to rest this narrative that's been haunting them all season long, but we'll see.
I think they need to pull out a win in this game. I really do. I think it's going to be important for closing out the rest of the season. I think a win in Houston will be really big to that end. But I think that, you know, whether they win or lose – the game after Orlando has the potential to be a trap game. I mean, you know, Jody Meeks is still out, but I mean, they beat the team that we play after them, Milwaukee. So, I mean, they can beat good teams that are playing as well as Boston is lately. I mean, Milwaukee is on the fringes of making the playoffs right now if it ended today, but you know, they're a good team.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, if the Seas go 3-1 with the one loss coming against Houston, is it a successful week?
Yeah, barely. That's what they should do for bare minimum.
Yeah, I mean, you should be beating the teams that you're supposed to beat. You know, Washington, Orlando, and Milwaukee. If you just beat those three, but you don't beat the lone quality team. I mean, what is it? What does it really say? But we'll see. I think it's an important game. But you are right. The Orlando game has all the makings of a trap game. So even if the Celtics do pull off a win in against Houston, if they lose the next night to Orlando, then it's still a tough week.
Let me interrupt real quick and just say, if any of you guys can hear that funky honking noise in the background, that's just some proof of where I am. That is the local tamale vendor making his way through my neighborhood.
I was wondering what that was. I was like, is that a ringtone or what is going on there? But
you were a brave soldier and kept right on going, which is admirable. But I felt like acknowledging it was probably the better move.
Yeah. All right, so... What do you say?
Milwaukee. We haven't talked about the Milwaukee game. That's how we're closing out the week.
I see the Seas winning that game. Milwaukee, like you said, they're a pretty dangerous team with Giannis there. It seems like he can sort of just do what he wants. And that's scary against a team like Boston, who doesn't really have anybody to guard him one-on-one. He's too long. He's too athletic. I don't know if we have – I mean
– I could see Smart being put against him and just getting all up into his body. But, I mean, apart from that, yeah, I don't think we have
a similar person. My second suggestion would have been Avery Bradley, but obviously he isn't playing. He might
conceivably could be ready by then, considering it comes just about a week from the announcement. Not quite, like, what is it, 5-6 days? Saturday?
I mean, if he can suit up for that game, and I just don't know if I want him going up against Lord Garden.
The Garden League, yeah.
Yeah, his first game back. You know, that's a tough one. But I can see Marcus Smart guarding him. I mean, Smart does seem to like guarding Kristaps Porzingis, and he has a similar body type. So if he can manage against Kristaps, I think he might be up for the challenge against Giannis Antetokounmpo. But we'll see. But I think that the Seas will pull that win off. So I see them going 3-1. Potential 2-2 if they go to sleep against Orlando.
Yeah, I could see them dropping a game to Orlando. I think if we go 2-2, it's going to be the obvious Houston and Milwaukee. But I'm optimistic. I think that we are going to win the game against Houston. And I think that we are going to win the game against Milwaukee and Orlando. I think we're going to have a 3-game losing streak and drop one to Washington.
Oh. Oh, boy. That's rough.
I know.
Washington is one of those teams that, again, you fall asleep on them, they can beat you.
Well, they're surging, man. They're now in fifth place behind Atlanta.
Yeah, they've been playing a lot better lately. They started off the season pretty poorly, but they're catching up now. But we'll see. I'm staying as optimistic as possible, but I say 3-1, 2-2. You say 3-game losing streak. We'll see.
I think 3-1 with a weird 3-game losing streak.
All right.
Balanced optimism.
All right. Well, guys, be sure to check out the links on the top of our website, CelticsLife.com. We have a huge variety of shirts and hoodies in our web store, and you can even buy tickets to the Celtics next game on our site. You can now find our podcast on iTunes, which is a pretty big deal. Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, SoundCloud, and Mixcloud. If you like what you hear, leave us a review, leave us any comments on the site, and we'll be sure to listen to all of your feedback. So we want to thank you. This is our third podcast. Wow, time flies. We want to thank everybody for listening to us, tuning in, and we will see you guys next week.